On this episode of FPL 360, we chat PandCon, we chat player performances, and we chat clubs trending upward. To start things off with a nice little abbreviation I came up with, PanCon. What do you think about that, Chuck? Panic readiness condition. Little play on DEFCON.
I think it's pretty good, especially considering there's a lot of panic this week.
So I didn't think Spurs could go from bad to worse, and I know they got a point, but from my perspective, I don't know where you're at right now, but I'd say you must be extremely, extremely worried.
Hold on 1 second. I need a little assistance for this. This team just sucks. There's no way around it at this point. Like, you've tried almost everything. Their defenders just decide to stand and create space that you can drive trucks through. No one's deciding that they want to give the ball to Kane, and they're lucky to have a point against bottom of the league Watford.
Yeah, they benefited from a Ben Foster, Kiko Femina blunder, which, I mean, that opportunity should not even have fallen to Dele, because Foster was clearly calling his defender off, who paid no attention and set up that goal. In terms of moving forward, I mean, this is like the third week in a row we've had this discussion on how to fix Spurs. And since it seems like we don't have a coherent answer, is it time to start really reevaluating their assets in fantasy?
Yeah, I mean,
are you trying to sell? Panic sell?
Well, here's what sucks. You can't sell them. if you're really looking at everything, unless you're willing to take heavy losses on the two most sellable assets in Harry Kane and Heung-min Son, like, no one else is worth more than chopped liver in a trade.
Yeah, I mean, you have Serge Aurier, he's 45th, Toby Alderweireld 62nd, Rose 66th, Jan Vertonghen 87th. I mean, we already knew that they were going to be low, but I mean, it's kind of amazing that after 9 matches, there's not a Spurs defender in the top 40.
I don't know if amazing is the word that I'd use. Probably more embarrassing. You claim to call yourself a top 6 club, and this is the best defense you can put out. It's just laughable.
I mean, obviously, the other issue, as you said, the supply lines, the Kane. Kane right now 16th among forwards in total points, Son 18th. The only guy, I guess, who's performing somewhat enough to be a regular is Lamella, but the problem is he's not getting consistent minutes. If you look overall points per game, he's 19th among midfielders. So with all that in hand, who is Dele? Maybe the only guy on the up right now? Are you trying to maybe buy low on some of these guys? Or, like, I don't know what your pulse is on it.
I mean, what sucks is with Dele, even though he had a decent showing, like, that goal still shouldn't have went in. Like, Kiko Femina just decided to not do anything, and you just saw the look of disbelief on Ben Foster's face when it went in. But, like, he also put shots on target and at least did something, which is more than every other Spurs player could say.
Yeah, I'm interested to get your take on, out of all these players, I guess maybe what probably Kane right now is the one you would want to go out and acquire.
I'd say realistically, the biggest Spurs on the up that aren't named like Harry Kane are the people who haven't played for Spurs in Giovanni Lo Celso and Ryan Sessegnon.
I wonder, would you want to, I mean, I feel like there's too much uncertainty right now to go out and trade for one of those guys, right? Until we see how they see them back in the pitch.
Well, I mean, Sessegnon's 24% owned, so you can likely get him for free in your league. Lo Celso's 42% owned. So, like, you still also have a chance that you could acquire him for nothing, or, like, an Ashley Westwood. Like, I definitely am not advocating that you trade assets for anyone not named Harry Kane. And the thing that sucks with Harry Kane is the fact that, like, realistically, it's recommended to not trade your first-round pick unless you're getting a first-round pick in return. And I would definitely still hold, like, say that that would be my advice to owners of Harry Kane. But it'd be hard not to be tempted if, like, an offer including a forward two and, like, a midfielder three came your way that you might not bite. Like, if it's, like, let's say you're offered Jamie Vardy and Oliver Norwood.
I think I might actually accept that trade. If you're a team, because chances are, if you pick Kane in the first round, you're probably not doing so hot in your league. So, I mean, you're getting, those are two, you know, it's like a high-end midfielder three, low-end midfielder two, and you're getting Vardy, who we know you're getting in Vardy. There's no issue in terms of supply over at Leicester. So I honestly might sign off on that. I think if you're someone who's gotten off to a really good start, maybe you drafted somebody like Mount or, yeah, like Norwood, like that, where guys who weren't really penciling in to be regulars for you, I would consider maybe kind of selling and maybe getting Kane, because obviously we know he's going to score. It's just in terms of how long can you sustain him not finding the back of the net?
Yeah, which, like, that situation's different for every team.
The other team, it stood out for me in terms of a disappointing result. It's got to be West Ham. I mean, they continue to be the Jekyll and Hyde club of the Premier League. They're going into a match that seems very favorable against an out-of-sorts Everton, and they lose 2-0 at Goodison. They're outshot 19-8, 10-4 shots on target. What is wrong with West Ham, or are we just starting to realize again this is what West Ham is?
Unfortunately, it has. I'd say two things. So, number one is it's clear that something is going on with Manuel Lanzini because he has not looked like himself on the field. In this specific game against Everton, the fact of the matter is that Fornals just isn't, like, up to par with the rest of that front three and has no chemistry with them. Like, he's been fine in midfield, but there were just acres of space between him and Masuaku.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that Yarmolenko didn't start, I mean, I know he did come on at halftime, but
I mean,
unless there was an injury we don't know about.
Well, Pellegrini did say, in terms of Yarmolenko, that he didn't want him playing three games in, like, 8 days because of all, like, everything he had to do for the Ukrainian national team in their qualifications. Which, like, that's fair because Yarmolenko barely played anything last year. Like, you don't want to break him this early in the season.
I think he made six appearances before he got hurt. So, yeah, I mean, he's already coming up on doubling his minutes from last season.
Yeah, and like, and I assume like even during the festive period, he'll probably start one game, play 45 in the next. Like, he's unfortunately just never gonna be a 2 to 3 game a week guy.
What do you? I was just completely at a loss for words rewatching how terrible that defending was on Bernard's opener.
Yeah, that actually, that goal beat the Spurs' awful defending for giving up the goal to Watford. So that made me feel a little bit better about the weekend. But, like, you have four defenders, and they all stand still, and then their goalkeeper just doesn't come to cover his weak side.
Yeah, and obviously we kind of knew, okay, we were a little concerned about Roberto stepping in for Fabianski. But at the end of the day, I mean, he made 9 saves.
Yeah, I mean, he...
It's not really his fault.
Not at all. Like, it is very clearly the rest of the team's fault.
You know, West Ham had kind of been looking like a potential source of clean sheets. Obviously, it's coincided with the absence of Fabianski, at least in this Everton match. I wouldn't put the blame on Roberto. Guys like Cresswell and Masuaku, who had been on the rise, it seems like they're falling off now. If you're someone who went out and got them in Fantrax off waivers, would you be keeping confidence in them, or do you think, you know, time to just to shed them?
I mean, if Cresswell plays, I'm still okay with playing him because of set pieces and whatnot. Masuaku is more of just an as-needed streaming basis. While we are talking about West Ham, it's probably a good time to talk about the relatively big trade that I made in our league.
Oh, yeah. If you'd like to... Yeah, this was... This has caused ripples throughout the league. rather large waves, I'd say.
It did, because I traded away both Felipe Anderson and Josh King to get Andriy Yarmolenko and Ricardo Pereira.
Yeah, I was on board with that.
Yeah, because for me, the crown jewel in that trade is obviously Ricardo.
Yeah.
Especially considering that my defense this year has been just comprised of streamers, and I needed just a big time defender to be able to trot out. And with a forward line of Aubameyang, Haller, and Neil Mapei, like, losing Josh King, who I do expect to regress over the rest of the season, isn't really the end of the world, even though it was probably at right now looks like a bit much to give up for those two.
I mean, based off of what we've seen out of Perea the last few weeks, he's averaging 16.5 points the last 4 without an attacking return, which is extremely impressive. He was one of the 3 defenders that went off this week who I kind of had penciled in our backline boomers, which is like our top 3 defenders for each game week. 5 key passes, 3 accurate crosses, 2 successful dribbles, and 4 tackles. Good for 18.5 points in a match where they conceded. So as of there this week, and it looks like you made out like a bandit.
Yeah, I mean, this week, if you look at scoring, considering Josh King didn't start and Anderson had, like, I think it was 2.5 points, I'll take it.
Yeah, I think long term, you know, it's gonna be interesting with Anderson. I mean, where do you think he's gonna end up this season?
I mean, I still think Anderson is a midfielder 2, fringe midfielder 1. I just think that by the end of the season, Ricardo's probably gonna match him, if not outperform him in points per game.
Yeah, game week 9 was the week of the fullbacks to a certain extent. We had Matt Target, defender 1, with 26 points. He scored the match-winning goal in Aston Villa's victory. He now has a goal and an assist, as well as 6 key passes, in his last two starts. He's very interesting. I mean, he's pretty available right now. Are you surprised that he hasn't been picked up more? Granted, it was just that 1 week with the assist, but he's up to 47%, but going into the weekend, he was around 20.
It's still a lot of scariness with Aston Villa, especially when you look into their upcoming schedule just isn't great, because in their
upcoming schedule was horrible.
Yeah, like you're not going to play them against City. You're not going to play them against Liverpool. You might play them against Wolves. Like Wolves and Newcastle, you'll probably play them against. Then United and Chelsea, followed by Leicester.
I mean, Jack Grealish was the guy. He was the highest scorer across all positions, probably the best player throughout the entire game week. 35 Fantrax points, a goal and an assist on two shots on target, 6 key passes, 4 straight double-digit outing. Is that enough to still make him? I mean, he's still a must-start, even though
that
stretch is brutal.
Yeah, no matter what, you're starting Grealish and McGinn.
What about Wesley?
I'm still not sold on Wesley, especially considering that, like, his best game was against Norwich. I'm also probably not starting El Ghazi during that stretch either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say Grealish, begin on the fence about Wesley. Ogazi, I mean, like Wolves, Newcastle, maybe even that United match, but I'm not playing
the next
City,
two.
City or Liverpool. Yeah. I guess the other guy, I mean, I'm not sure how you kind of rated everyone's performances. Outside of Grealish, the best guy for me was probably Harvey Barnes.
Oh, yeah. It was wonderful owning Harvey Barnes in a league, because, like, that performance is literally what we've been waiting for from Harvey Barnes since he was recalled midway through his loan to West Brom last season.
Yeah, I think out of all the players this season, the person I think he made three appearances on my column. Just saying, wait for that marquee Barnes performance. We finally got it. 24.5 points, midfielder 3, 2 assists from 3 key passes, plus 4 shots. The number that stood out for me, and I tweeted this out over the weekend, he's averaging over 12 points per match when he plays 50-plus minutes.
Yeah, which that's a pretty insane rate. But, like, it's definitely boding well now that it seems like he's become a week-to-week starter for Leicester.
Yeah, and the relevance of pointing out the 50-minute mark is that he's, in his starts, he's gone 71, 82, 58, 79. So he hasn't even played a complete match.
I unfortunately, just with the way that Brendan Rodgers likes to change the game by bringing in defensive midfielders, I'm not sure if he will play 90 this entire season.
He's at 39%. He's up roughly 6% from last week.
Bet you that'll double after waivers tomorrow.
Yeah, where do you see his ownership ending up after waivers clear?
I'm going to say 67.
Is he a 15 to 20% free agent budget bid?
Because
he's probably the top guy.
Yeah, if he's out there in a league where I'm bidding, I'd bid $15+ on him. And considering the fact that Leicester is looking like almost a lock for top four, he's waiver one priority.
Yeah, I don't think anybody can really rival him just in terms of efficiency, you know, the opportunity for in playing time, form.
Yeah.
It's kind of a perfect storm to make him be the coveted jewel on the waiver wire.
Yeah, one very interesting thing watching that game was that he was consistently the most forward midfielder on the entire team, even more forward than Jose Perez, who's played as both a 10 and a striker.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing look, no player right now. I mean, I'm trying to think of somebody probably outside of David Brooks. I mean, Harvey Barnes is probably the best player owned and, you know, available in more than 50% of leagues.
I mean,
literally
writing about Harvey Barnes at the beginning of the season, I wrote basically like he's one of the best prospects to come through the league since David Brooks. Like, he is the best comp for him, and you want Barnes in your team.
Yeah, another guy, and you were saying how Leicester's a lock for top four. Obviously, one of their main competitions is going to be Chelsea, and I have to tip my cap to myself for bringing in Callum Hudson-Odoi in FPL. The dude's on a roll, 3 matches, 3 assists, 5 key passes, 3 successful dribbles in 89 minutes in their win over Newcastle. 20 points, forward two. Here's the number that really stands out, though. He's averaging 15 points per match since coming back from injury.
That is pretty good.
An assist in the 27-minute cameo against Brighton, assisted 80 minutes against Southampton, assist in 89 against Newcastle. So with us having a – I have a feeling that he's going to frequent our list of top performers on a week-to-week basis. What is his ceiling? No, that's too easy. What's his floor? What's his floor?
The problem is, like, realistically, we don't know what his ceiling is. Like, he could end the season, points per game-wise, as a forward one. Mm-hmm. I think, at worst, he'll be a forward three. Because, like, you're starting him week in, week out.
I think rest of the season, I would say he's a top 10 forward.
He's probably flirting around.
Let me look at
I have to bring up forwards.
So right now, forward 9 is Hilaire, forward 10 is Aubameyang, 11 is King, 12 is Vardy, 13 is Richarlison. So where would you see him fitting in rest of season?
I think Richarlison's probably his best comp, because at averaging 10.61 a game, sitting in 13th, that's probably a pretty good place to expect him to end up, because he gets some counting stats, but it's still mostly goals and assists.
Mm-hmm.
I did try trading for him in a package involving David Silva, but which was unfortunately rejected, but it's going to be really hard to trade for him right now.
Well, speaking of, I guess we'll stick with Chelsea here. They have a very good run the next three, Burnley, Watford, and Palace. Obviously, in draft leagues, Callum Hudson-Odoi is owned. In FPL, though, I feel like he's worth a look. And I mean, is a Chelsea stack in order?
Oh, as soon as I wildcard in FPL, he's into my team. I'd even be tempted to take a hit. The problem is, like, I don't necessarily like transferring Yarmolenko out for him this week.
The way I kind of was looking at, most likely people will go maybe Tomori with Tammy, or Tomori and Callum Hudson-Odoi like I have right now. But Alonso seeming sustainable, not only sustainable, but almost viable now.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Alonso pushes Emerson back to the bench now, because he's going to be very hard to sit, considering he's now defending and attacking like the old Alonso. I, like, when it comes to Hudson-Odoi, I'm tempted to cut my losses on Mason Mount and go with him instead.
That was going to be my next question. Who is the Chelsea player to target? It's got to be price-wise. It's got to be Calum Hudson-Odoi.
Yeah, in FPL. Like, especially considering if you got Mount early enough, you're selling him at like 6.4. So you get to just bank your profits on him and move to the next rising Chelsea asset.
Mm-hmm. You know, before we go on to one of the other clubs on the rise, Pulisic back from exile. He played a role in that goal. Is there a situation where you can be starting him even when he doesn't start in Fantrax, or is it, or is that still
way too much uncertainty right now? We've got to see at least 2 to 3 games where he gets a return from the bench before we can realistically look at that as being an option, just because starting lineup spots are precious. Yeah. And Pulisic's usage has been sparing, to say the least. And just with more forwards in the mix, like, it's going to be tough sledding for him.
Yeah. You know, it's tough. This is somebody that we kind of all, you know, going into, I think when we did our initial preseason rankings, I know I had Pulisic around, like, midfielder. I think I had him around midfielder 25. And then when I ended up updating him, I moved him up to midfielder 15. Where did you have him coming into the year, and how has your projected finish point changed, given he's been out of the lineup so much?
Well, I know that I was definitely lower on him than you going into the season, because I think I had him at like more of a midfielder 2 or 3. But I'm still like really concerned on exactly where he'll end up at the end of the season. Like, he might not even make the top 50 midfielders.
I do think he'll sneak in, but I would be shocked if he finishes higher than midfielder 40.
I'm trying to find our actual rankings.
You know, the issue with Pulisic was, and this is one of the first times I've, you know, really had this issue with my rankings, is I've ranked him based upon where I would rank him in order to ensure that I was able to draft him, because I had a feeling, and as you could kind of tell across the board from drafts, people were aggressive in drafting him too early. So in order to get him, you did have to reach a lot. Unfortunately, or fortunately, depending upon if you picked him or not, whoever used, you know, a fourth round pick on him, it's kind of come back to bite them.
Yes, it has.
But no, I mean, I could see him. The thing is, with a couple good performances in matches where Chelsea have the game in hand, he could still easily slip into the top 40.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely could with just like a couple things going on.
Moving away from Chelsea and back to Leicester. Obviously, we just talked about Perea. Fourth consecutive home win puts Leicester joint third with Chelsea after the weekend. Who is the best Leicester player to target in FPL? I'm on Madison. Every week I ask you, are you getting Madison back in? He's coming off of polarizing weeks with the England stuff and then not looking his best in a good performance by City. Should we consider pivoting off of him?
If you have him, I don't think there's an issue with where you need to pivot off of him. Part of the thing with Leicester is just going to be the fact that they have a lot of players that can attack, and they're all going to be involved. Like, you could make a case for James Maddison. You can make a case for Yuri Tielemans. Mm-hmm. You can make a case for Harvey Barnes. And then that's not even talking about Jamie Vardy.
Well, I wanted to get your opinion on this, because as everyone can tell, if you listen, Chuck and I are very big fans of Harvey Barnes. We're also very big fans of James Maddison. The problem is, I would consider going from Maddison to Barnes. The only problem is, I feel like I'm just getting such terrible FOMO thinking about transferring out Madison.
No,
I know you've had it recently.
I mean, I can definitely understand that, and it's 100% fair. I think if you're trying to go big with your forwards, you probably want to just cut your midfield down to two premium midfielders and then have Callum Hudson-Odoi and Harvey Barnes as your mid-range guys, and then some fodder at that fifth spot.
I'm looking at it right now, and doing a Madison to Barnes allows me to upgrade Pukki to someone that's not named Timu Pukki, which would be very nice. I think his, I do. I mean, I don't think he's going to totally disappear. I think he'll be back, but the Pukki party seems like it's pretty much over.
I would agree with that.
What do you think Pukki's gonna end off at in terms of a goal tally? Because I think initially when he was on fire, we said putting his over under at, I think, 15 and a half was probably a fair number. Do you think that's still fair?
That's probably still a relatively fair number, because the thing is, when looking at those numbers at the beginning of the season, even though we couldn't have accounted for him scoring so much at the beginning, it still includes hot and cold streaks.
I looked at some numbers. I don't know if I ended up running it in one of the columns after the international break for the first one, but I looked at all the double-digit scorers in the last 10 years who played for newly promoted clubs, and their average goals through their first, I think it was 6 or 7 matches, was about 2.95. So Pukki was clearly out of the gates overperforming. But the other thing I did notice was that Mitrovic had 5 goals in his first 6 or 7 matches last year. He ended with 10. So
Yeah, I don't think it'll be that bad.
I was going to say, do you think he ends up with more than Mitrovic had last season?
I damn sure hope so, because Mitrovic, I mean, that was just like
He just fell off the map.
essentially.
How about what did Do you know, actually, I'll look it up. I'll stall a little bit. But do you know off the top of your head how many Jimenez ended on last season?
13.
13. Do you think Pukki ends up with more than 13?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I could see him getting, I could see him getting
But
15, but it's.
he's not going to have 10 assists like Jimenez last season.
Oh, no. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I guess we'll. The other club, I mean, we talked about Villa briefly. You know, they're on an impressive run, 9 goals, 2 wins, and a draw in their last 3. I mean, what do you just do? What do you do with them in an FPL? Do you kind of just avoid all of them with how bad that run is? I know in Fantrax you're going to start, as you said,
Oh,
Grealish and
yeah,
McCann.
I'm completely avoiding
Is
overall.
there anyone you would consider keeping?
If you have Grealish, I'd consider keeping him just for a little bit until you have two transfers and can move to Hudson-Odoi or Harvey Barnes. Which I also, speaking of Harvey Barnes, I just did like a wild card draft involving both him and Hudson-Odoi in my team. I don't hate it.
It's hard. They're hard to ignore with their current price point.
Well, the midfield would include Callum Hudson-Odoi, Harvey Barnes, Kevin De Bruyne, Sadio Mane, and 4.5 midfielder Matthew Longstaff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't totally hate that, to be honest.
And that allows Callum Wilson, keeping Sergio Aguero for the next 2 game weeks, and Raul Jimenez up top.
Yeah, I mean, that honestly might not be a terrible move. Yeah, I think I'd sign off on that if I still have my wild card.
Well, this week I am going to make a legitimate decision on my wild card after Manchester City's Champions League fixtures. If Aguero doesn't play 90, then I will not be wild carding because I will be captaining him. if he plays 90, then I will be wild carding.
Yeah, I think that's probably a safe move. The last team to really catch the eye this week, I almost said this weekend, it's really this week now, Sheffield United, 1-0 win over Arsenal at home. What do we make of the co-best defense in the league right now?
I wish I could say I have much analysis for this, but they're really good.
It doesn't make sense.
I mean, my comp for them originally was Middlesbrough coming up, but defensively, because of their scheme, they're better.
Watching that match, they were. I was under the impression that even if they played their game, that Arsenal would still be able to score two goals, and they should have had one because of that egregious miss.
Oh my goodness! How did Pepe shoot that and have it go literally in the opposite direction in which he was shooting?
So I've seen that happen once before. It was two summers ago. I was playing in a co-ed summer league, and my friend who had only played soccer for one summer did that on a similar situation on a ball I played him across a six-yard box, where he went to swing at it and it popped up and it hit the top of his boot and backspun off and went backwards. Oof. Now, mind you, this is a kid who's never it does not get paid. He's not transferred to Arsenal. So we kind of gave him a break. And then he scored on his next chance, so he kind of made up for it.
You also have to remember the amount of penalties that Pepe had, and like what you were about to get into. He cost $80 million.
Yeah. That was such a bad miss that I was like, they must have got deflected. There must have been something else. And looking at the replay, yikes. There was also the penalty shout.
I want to give you a situation. So, game on the line. You're clear through on goal. You have Pepe, Adama Traore, and ASM. Who's taking the chance?
Can I pick myself?
No.
No, probably. Ooh. That's a tough one. Absolutely not Pepe. I'd rather have Roy Hodgson chop the diving better than him at this point. I'd probably go with ASM because I know at least if he scores, we'll get a good celebration.
It's just funny that, like, we went from having one of those players and Adama Traore to now three.
Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, to be honest, I don't think Arsenal played well enough to deserve a point.
Oh, they definitely did not deserve a point. If anything, Sheffield deserved to win this game 3-1.
Yeah, I started Lundstrom in FPL, not maybe hoping for a garbage time assist or something. Instead, he comes away with a clean sheet. He's now the top scoring defender in FPL.
I started Lundstrom and left O'Connell as sub 2 instead of sub 1. So while I was happy with the clean sheet, I missed out on an assist and all 3 bonus points.
That's tough. I had a bench of Cresswell, Greenwood, and Lowton with Salah in my lineup, so it didn't matter. I got 0 points off my bench.
Yeah, Lowton was my player that came in, so I got 0 instead of an 11 changing around the whole game week.
Yeah, speaking of O'Connell, you want to tell our listeners the situation we have with his scoring? Because I did not realize I was not aware of this until you brought it to my attention. Recording.
Well, so I like to preface this with in one league, because we have nerfed aerial duels for central defenders. I actually dropped O'Connell ahead of this game in favor of going with goodness. Colin Chambers. Because Colin Chambers has been getting key passes. He's been, like, actually doing things when he played for Arsenal. Jack O'Connell in normal scoring Fantrax leagues is defender number 7. With a total of, goodness, wrong league. I have way too many tabs open right now. With a total of 95.25 points. In our league where aerial duels have been nerfed, he has 70.25 as defender 12.
Jeez. That's quite the differential. All right, we're going to wrap this episode up with 3 questions from our awesome listeners. The first one's from Ben Garside. He wants to know, is the Toffee improvement sustainable, and which Everton assets should we be targeting?
It's a tough one.
I'm right ahead, going to be pumping the brakes.
This is where it's tough, because I'd say yes and no. Like, overall, is this performance closer to what we expect from Everton? Yes. But also, would most of your investments in them, if you're paying for them, essentially end up being short-term because of the fact that their festive run is brutal? Also, yes.
So I'm probably going to sit on Lucas for the next 4 matches. However, they have Leicester away on December 1st, Liverpool away on December 4th, Chelsea at home December 7th, Manchester United away on the 15th, December 21st, home against Arsenal.
Yeah,
that is just awful.
That's a gauntlet. So are there any Everton players that even through that you would still start every single one of those games?
In Fantrax or FPL?
Fantrax.
Maybe. I'd probably start Kilfy.
I would still start Digne, because
yeah, Digne and Kilfy for
like
me.
I
don't think I'd start Richarlison.
See, that's where it's like, I probably would.
Well, with the tackles lately.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, Richarlison does enough of just like everything that without a goal, he's still giving you at least 7 to 10 points.
It probably makes more sense for us to provide some names, not those guys, though, because I doubt anyone listening that needs to know that you should probably keep starting those guys. I'm guessing they're probably not listening to this.
Well, that's where it sucks, because like,
what about
I'm not starting a single defender not named Lucas Digne during that stretch.
How about Iwobi? If he's starting.
The Iwobi, Theo Walcott, Bernard situation is where things get a little interesting to me. Because Everton was clearly much better with them playing instead of Gylfi, even though angry Gylfi off the bench is probably one of my favorite things that I've seen this season.
He scored a golazo.
Well, not only that, 30 seconds after being subbed in, he almost scored a goal to begin with.
Yeah.
I'm not ready to trust Iwobi, but you have to look at the fact that he still got 10.5 points against Everton without actually registering an attacking return. And he also got 6 points against Manchester City, again, without registering an attacking return. So if he starts, I don't really have much of an issue in starting him in the not Liverpool games.
I would I would be fine starting him if he was like the last, if my team is set and it's a decision of do I start a assume you have three fours, do I start a fourth defender or a fourth midfielder? If you're back and forth, I'd be fine with Iwobi. But I'm not penciling him in at all. I'm plugging him in as needed. I do like him season long. I mean, he's right now he's owned in 74% of leagues, so it's going to be tough to get him. I doubt he's available in most 12 teams. But if you look at Everton down the line, I mean, Southampton, Wolves, Villa, Bournemouth in four of their last five. That's not bad. They also have Brighton, West Ham, Newcastle, Watford, Crystal Palace, a stretch in January. But they do have another brutal run down the back end. So I would like to have stock in Iwobi if possible.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
And I think you
Where are
can
you?
buy low on him right now if somebody is looking at his schedule and saying, I want nothing to do with him.
Where are you on Theo Walcott?
I'm not. Like I want nothing to do with Theo Walcott. I'd go as far to say I would advise people to get rid of Walcott.
Well, I mean, no one owns him, so. Because Theo
If
Walcott
you're
is owned in 15% of leagues.
one of the 15% of owners that owns him, I would get him rid of him. I mean, it's just we know what's going to happen. He's going to have another good game and then he's going to get hurt. Remember, we're talking about Theo Walcott. He's not getting any younger. I don't know. I mean, is that, I think that maybe that's a little bit aggressive. He did look like the old Theo Walcott.
Well, the thing that was most interesting to me in that game was that he was like taking shots from midfield, which we haven't seen that from Theo Walcott in a very long time.
Well, I mean, here's the other issue too.
It's West Ham.
West Ham's defense was not there mentally. And Walcott, coming into this match, he hadn't gone more than 30 minutes in a game this whole season. So
I just find it interesting that he came in the shake things up lineup where Richarlison also went up top because we get to a point again in this season where Everton's forwards can't be trusted.
I don't know what, I don't really want anything to do with Everton outside of, excuse me, outside of Iwobi.
I mean,
I mean,
I love Richarlison.
oh no, I mean,
You
in
mean
terms,
outside of the
sorry, I mean,
not 100% owned players?
I'm,
Okay.
my bad. I needed to, in terms of somebody where you can either add him and or maybe trade something that's you're not gonna it's not gonna be a lopsided trade either way. Iwobi's the only guy I'm really interested in. I want nothing to do with Moise Kean, nothing to do with Calvert-Lewin, although I do like Calvert-Lewin as a player. I mean, I own Andre Gomez in our keeper league that does passes, but that's not a standard scoring.
Considering what he can do in the box in their like next couple, would you take a flyer on Yerry Mina?
You know, I had Mina in the beginning of the season in a couple leagues, and I just haven't been. I
It's
think I
just
dropped him in one, and then the other one, I just don't. Do I still have him? Yeah, I
none
still
of
have him.
the none of the
I don't
team
play him.
None of the teams that Everton are going to be playing in like their next five are good in the air.
See, he's someone where if you play in a league with customized scoring, where it's a lot of other stuff where it's individual defensive actions are weighed more, stuff like that. Mina's great. I mean, in Chuck, in the one league we're in, he's averaging like 27 points, which is puts him towards like the top 15 or 20 for defenders in how that scoring works. I mean, we won't bore everyone with going into it, but he's not a standard Toga scoring lock. Yeah, in that league, he's defender. He's like defender 30 in points per game.
Well, but I mean, part of that's also just because there was a brutal stretch, because he did 15 and 16 in his first two games, and then 0.259 for the negative 0.725 is what's destroyed his entire season's rankings.
Yeah, because it was the, yeah, it was really that. I don't know. I just think that they're going to give up so many goals that, I mean, right now, I guess you could stream him the next couple weeks. I mean, looking at their run, Brighton at home, Spurs at home. Sorry, Brighton away, Spurs at home. So that's probably at least two draws. And then Southampton, Norwich.
I mean, it's just, it's an interesting thing to look at.
So I guess maybe to give a better answer, since we kind of were all over the place with that, in terms of outfielders, Mina is 58%. So out of these guys, who would you consider? Bernard, 45, Calvert-Lewin, 35, Gomez, 17, Walcott, 15.
Can I say none of them except against Norwich?
Yep, that's an acceptable answer.
Then none of them except against Norwich, at which point I would consider all of them as viable streaming options.
Yeah, that's fair. What about the situation? Do we see Coleman coming back in?
Just because he's the captain, yes. He's going to get a long leash. Should he get a long leash? No. Will he? Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely something to monitor. Our next question is from the FPL _360 hotline. Another goal for Raul. At 7.1, are you buying him in FPL?
I'm very close to it.
I was skeptical after his performance. Seeing the goal, he's now somewhat of a tempting pivot from Pookie.
Well, I mean, you have to consider he's on penalties.
His schedule's also very good.
He got two goals called back in that game, so it could have been a lot better. And then, yeah, speaking of the schedule, so you have Newcastle away, Arsenal away, home versus Aston Villa, Bournemouth away, Sheffield away, Sheffield home, West Ham home, Brighton away. Like,
and I mean, even if you're looking, and I don't always like to look too far ahead, but after that, I mean, Norwich December 21st with Spurs in between, so
that's, I mean, a good real run. Realistically, his run for the rest of the season is pretty good.
Yeah, outside of Liverpool at home and United away, January 23rd and February 1st. And then they also have City, Liverpool back-to-back at the end of December.
Yeah, but like, you can easily sit him through those. Like, it's, as far as like runs for the rest of the season go, Wolves, I mean, also have a pretty good one.
Based upon what he did last time, you probably want to start him against City.
It's definitely a tempting proposition. And the, I know there's a situation with Europa still going on, but if you look at everything, Jimenez is the Wolves forward that's rotation proof. It's everyone rotates around him.
I was at a bar getting breakfast a couple weekends ago in the city, and I went with one of my friends from high school. He was like, let's go. It's this soccer bar, blah, blah, blah. And unbeknownst to me, it was a Wolves bar. And I asked one of the managers there, because he was one of their bigger supporters of the people who work there. I said, what's your stance on the league versus Europa League? And his response was, we're probably never going to be in there we're probably not going to be back there for a very long time. I don't care. As long as you don't get relegated, go all in on Europa League.
That's a pretty fair response.
And I'm just curious, like, let's say that's the mentality they take. I mean, is that, how much is that, this little mini resurgence from Raul Wade against two potentially if they somehow make a miraculous run in the Europa League.
Well, the thing is, at the point, FPL-wise, once it gets to that point, it won't matter. Because right now, considering Europa League's still in the group stages, Wolves are sitting on 3 points with two matches played, but still should have a pretty good shot at advancing through their group. Like, it doesn't matter until the knockout stages in, like, February.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking more hypothetically down the line. I guess it would be more geared towards draft leagues. But, I mean, are we not – do we kind of just not have to worry about him?
I mean, in draft leagues, you own him and you're starting him. Like, it's not really a question.
Yeah, I mean, I'm considering Jimenez, Pukki de Jimenez. I'm also thinking about maybe if I saw Madison, I could go up to Callum Wilson. So he's definitely on my radar. But I might want one more. I don't know. I feel like the two-match sample size is, in some cases, is good, but I kind of want to see what he does against Newcastle and Arsenal to see if this is just a blip or if this is Jimenez looking like the guy from last season.
I mean, movement-wise, he's always been the guy from last season. It was more just the fault of his forward partner because Diego Jota pumped up his assist a lot.
So, yes, you think that if you're going to go for Jimenez, you got to get him this week or you just got to wait and hope he pans out?
I would say that because, like, if you're going to transfer in a forward, don't you want to transfer them in if they're not playing for a top six team facing Newcastle, since Newcastle apparently only gets up for top six teams?
Yeah, that's asking not a bad approach. I already did my transfer this week. I brought in Connolly for Greenwood.
My transfer is actually a very interesting one that I've done this week, because it was a pre-potential wild card, and I'm okay with playing them if I need to. And I did Heung-min Son to Anthony Martial.
I like it. And, oh, wait, we forgot to talk about. So I did not – I sent a text out before the match on Sunday. I said, I'll be happy if we lose by one. I'll be absolutely ecstatic if we draw.
So you're absolutely ecstatic is what you're saying?
Yeah, considering that was like a mid-table Premier League starting 11 that we put out there.
So, actually, not to get away from the listener questions, but like, what are you doing with the United back three? Is that repeatable, or do you think that they're going to go back to the 4-3-3 with everyone healthy?
I think they go back to the 4-3-3 when everyone's back. Because I feel more comfortable with all those guys. I mean, right now it is what it is. You know, people are playing that shouldn't be playing. It's not a United quality United side right now with all these injuries. Too thin in key spots. I mean, once Martial's back and yeah, they'll
be perfect. Please let him play against Norwich this weekend.
Yeah.
Please. That would be just what my FPL team needs after being just below the average for these past two game weeks.
But we're not going to go down the United rabbit hole. I'll save that for our preview episode this week. Last question from Liam on Twitter. Manchester City rotation, is it time to bin Aguero in FPL?
This is another thing where it falls under it depends. I'm definitely waiting for Champions League to see what happens with that, because City's next two fixtures are about as good as they can be.
Yeah, depending upon his usage this week will kind of dictate what kind of move I would do. I have KDB and Sterling, and I think I'm just going to fly my flag with them for most of the season. I know you were talking about Aguero before. So, but yeah, I mean, I guess you'd have to wait and see on the usage, right? There's no sense in jumping the gun early if you're thinking about getting rid of him.
Most definitely.
That's going to do it for this episode of FPL 360. I need to go watch the Patriots play the Jets on Monday Night Football. Remember, you can find us on Twitter at FPL_360 and pretty much everywhere podcasts are located on the internet.